WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Hamas has been firing thousands of rockets into Israel over the last 5 days, some taking cover in Ben-Gurion Airport. Israel is hitting Gaza with relentless airstrikes, and the death toll has climbed with more than 2,300 on both sides. CBS's Imtiaz Taieb says the Israeli military is also mobilizing in northern Israel.
Over the past 4 days, Israel has been trading rocket fire with Palestinian factions inside Lebanon, but perhaps most worrying, with Hezbollah. Hezbollah is perhaps the most powerful military force inside of Lebanon. It is a very formidable foe, and if Israel were to engage into any kind of conflict with Hezbollah, it could truly risk engulfing this entire region.
The U.S. says at least 22 Americans have died in Saturday's attacks, and before boarding a plane for Israel today, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said he's concerned about U.S. citizens that may have been taken hostage by Hamas.
We have a number of Americans who remain unaccounted. We are working very closely with the government of Israel to determine their whereabouts, and if they have been taken hostage by Hamas, to work to secure their release.
The Israeli military calls up reservists to join the fight against Hamas, and a man in Maryland describes what it's like having his son on the front lines.
When Mitchell Bard, who lives in Chevy Chase, Maryland, first heard that his 26-year-old son, an Israeli Army reservist, was being called up to serve, he was proud, but he also felt
a sense of fear and terror.
Bard says since then he's been lying awake at night, filled with uncertainty.
You don't know exactly what's happening to your child and what sort of danger he may be in.
Nick Iannelli for CBS News, Chevy Chase, Maryland.
The UAW strike has suddenly expanded. WWJ's Luke Sloan.
The union says 8,700 members at Ford's Kentucky truck plant have joined the strike. This comes after UAW leaders say Ford refused to make any further movement in bargaining. Ford calls the decision, quote, grossly irresponsible but unsurprising. Ford's Kentucky truck plant makes Super Duty trucks, the Expedition, also the Lincoln Navigator. The move comes just one day before the four-week mark since contracts expired at Ford, GM, and Stellantis. Luke Sloan for CBS News, Detroit.
House Republicans nominate Steve Scalise to serve as Speaker, but he still needs full approval from the House, and it's not clear whether he has enough votes. CBS's Scott McFarland.
One of the people who ousted Kevin McCarthy, Tim Burchett. Mr. Burchett, you want to vote for Mr. Scalise on the floor?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Congressman. He's on board Steve Scalise. There's some news just now. He is going to be on the Scalise train, but there are others at this moment who've yet to commit.
This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Some intimate parts.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. Following a rebranding from the University of Wisconsin Systems to the Universities of Wisconsin, the universities are looking at more substantive changes as well. Universities of Wisconsin President Jay Rothman says the universities will launch a direct admissions system, which will admit students capable of succeeding before they even apply. The universities will also look into a dual enrollment system, which will allow residents to get college credits while still in high school. A bipartisan bill in the Wisconsin legislature would allow school board members to fill in as school bus drivers amid a shortage in those positions. The bill would create an exception in state law and make it clear that school board members will be allowed to legally drive the bus. The main concern was that insurance companies would not have been able to determine if the bus was being driven legally by a school board member, should it be involved in an accident, and may not have covered the loss. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Red Delicious Honey Crisp. Granny Smith, if you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
93.5, The Tap. It's what's on tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5, The Tap.
On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, at Green News Report.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Wow, what a day today was in the news from the UAW. There are another 8,700 workers taking to the picket lines in Kentucky. Look, you know, evidently Ford has not been moving. So they have now evidently, as of 6:30 today, gone and put another 8,700 UAW members on the picket line, and this is an escalation that you're gonna come to see as this continues. And look, nobody wants this. This isn't good for anyone. It's not good for Ford. It's not good for the UAW members. It's not. This is one of those things where you go, maybe get into a room, hammer it out, and get it done. Maybe just a thought. But as I said, 8,700 UAW members walked off the job today at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time in Louisville, Kentucky, at the Ford truck plant. And it's one of their most profitable. It's one of their most iconic plants. And again, this is that escalation that is going to happen as you see this stand-up strike continue. Our thoughts are with the workers as they take to the picket line. But this is going to continue. I had some great hope. I really did. I had some hope that this was going to get moving in a good direction, that things were going to smooth out, that there were some really good agreements that were happening, that there was some really good conversations, and well, not so much. Now, I guess on Friday, Sean Fain will hold a Facebook Live, and there'll be more bargaining updates, and we'll get more out of that. But until then, this is what we know as of this moment. Sad to see. Again, this is another one of those moments where you look at these extraordinarily profitable companies, and it's not like they can't afford it. It's that they don't want to. That's the part that gets me. That's the part. Now, hey, good news. Good news. I got an email today. Told me I won a Ninja air fryer. Yeah, I won. Yeah, all I had to do was, you know, give them a whole bunch of information and do a whole bunch of things. And the reason I bring this up is, and this is kind of a public service announcement. There are so many scammers out there. If someone's asking you for your banking information, don't give it to them. If someone is asking you, and especially if someone's telling you, hey, go get gift cards to, oh, I don't know, a big box retailer, you know, to, you know, eBay Motors or any place like that, and then read us the numbers over the phone. Don't do that. And the reason I bring this up is I was at the bank today. We were we're planning our Christmas vacation, so we went to the bank, and there was an older guy, you know, an older guy. I mean, he was probably in his 80s. And I felt for him because he's talking to the teller, and the, you know, the teller's, you know, what caught my attention is the teller's like, oh, you know, just almost pleading, you know, that there's nothing we can do. I'm so sorry. And, you know, just, and so I started listening, and this poor guy, five grand, the guy was out in Lowe's gift cards that he evidently read the numbers over the phone. And the teller's like, hey, I'm sorry, you know, we gave you the money out of your account. Yeah. But there's literally nothing we can do once you give those numbers away. So, you know, here's the thing. If someone calls you and says, hey, a grandchild's been in trouble, go rush to the, you know, blah, 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 you know, anything, you know, Home Depot, Lowe's, you know, the local chicken place. I don't care. Anyone where there's a gift card. And go buy some gift cards and get us the money so we can help you get them out of jail or out of trouble or get them what they need. Don't do it. Call them first. You know, call somebody first. Because the scammers are out in huge ways. And it was heartbreaking because, you know, I felt for the teller. Because the teller, you know, I felt for the guy as well because he's out $5,000. But to be honest, if it's me, I'm going to spend $5,000 additional to make sure that nobody ever finds out that I got taken. But this poor guy, you know, who knows? Could have been his last $5,000 for all we know. And this is the kind of despicable treatment you see from these schemers and scammers. So please, by all means, don't do it. Let's start there. All right, so no speaker. No speaker again. World's in chaos. No speaker. Country's got problems. No speaker. Things got to get done. No speaker. A Republican Party who tells us they want to lead, no leader, no speaker, nothing. And what's interesting, even more so, I got to tell you, Donald Trump got kind of slapped today because his hand-chosen, hand-picked pit bull got shown the door. Jim Jordan is not going to be the speaker. Scalise got the votes, I guess, out of the powwow they had today. It's got to go to the full floor, which evidently he doesn't have the votes for. So we'll see what happens. But hey, you know, Trump's hand-picked candidate got shown the door, and I find that very interesting. But again, nothing today. We won't have a speaker. And I wonder if there'll be one tomorrow. Because look, if Scalise had the votes, it'd be done by now. If Scalise had enough votes to be speaker, it would be over because, look, the Republican Party's got to understand just how bad this looks, not just for the party, but for the country. You know, the fact that the Republican Party is so dysfunctional, so broken and so incapable of, you know, policing themselves, of leading themselves, let alone the entire country, not just hurts us here at home, but hurts us around the world. And what I've found really interesting is all of the Fox News attacks, all of the you know, the Tim Scott attacks, all of the Republican attacks on Joe, this is Joe Biden's fault. No. This is the Republican Party's fault for showing the world that our country is dysfunctional. Our country is divided. Our country in this moment, because of the Republican Party, is weakened. We are viewed around the world as weakened because we can do nothing right now. We can literally do nothing. Stop and think about this for a second. We can do nothing. Nothing. there is no functional House of Representatives. Now, the president says that he wants aid for Taiwan, for Ukraine, and Israel to be tied into one package. Well, good luck on that, because we don't have a house for that kind of an aid package to emanate from. Nothing. And there's part of me that goes, you know, I'm hoping that what happened in Israel and what's happening there now and all the chaos that's going on there, because understand, they're saying, what I'm hearing is part of why it happened when it happened is, hello, total dysfunction here, our inability to respond. Thanks, House Republicans. Thanks, Tommy Tuberville. Thanks, GOP. Now, I was reading this story today that said, look, you know, as our members of the House were being briefed on what was going on, you know, the classified members-only briefing about what's going on over in Israel. They came out of the meeting. Clearly shaken were the words. Max Miller, Republican from Ohio, evidently told some reporters that he learned something very, very new within the room that has changed the scope and how I see this developing situation. What does that mean? Does it mean now you're maybe going to do your job because you now realize that the globe is in peril, that our dysfunction is reverberating across the globe? Maybe, just a thought, that the Republican Party is so badly broken and so much of a cult that they are completely off the deep end. Because here's the other part. I love this today. This was my favorite story of the day. Because remember, the GOP is the constitutional party. They're the God-fearing constitution. Carry it in their pocket. Carried it around in their pocket. Evidently, our former president, Donald J. Trump's lawyers, argued to a judge in Colorado that it's not a requirement for the president to support the Constitution. No. No. Evidently, you know, the president's oath within the 14th Amendment, because they surely knew, requires the president to swear to preserve, protect, and defend, not to support. I don't know what that means. But again, this is that splitting hairs thing that I got to wonder, my Constitution friends, does this not make you kind of, I don't know, question your dear leader? Evidently, they claim the 14th Amendment never intended to apply to the president. The Constitution did not intend to apply to the president. I'm not making this up. This is their argument. These are the legal arguments they are taking into a courtroom and saying before a person in a robe with their hand on the book swearing to tell the truth. It's not the president's job to support the Constitution. And again, I've got questions. And I guess purely technically, when you know, Trump put his hand on the Bible, and I think it was John Roberts who initiated the oath, it says preserve, protect, and defend. I don't know where support would fall in there, but I would think preserve, part of that, protect, sure, defend, all that, yeah, but not support. Huh. Interesting. But here's the thing. This falls right in the line with some of their other legal arguments. Like, you know, I can't possibly inflate the cost of my properties because the Saudis will always bail me out. And the reason I think these two defenses are interesting, because I want my MAGA crowd. Please, MAGA world. Please, red hats. Tell me how that makes you feel. Do you have a problem with either of those defenses, or is that that's just him being smart? Is that Donald Trump being smart? Are these smart arguments? I gotta know. I gotta hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Got a lot to get to, a lot to talk about. Amazing stuff. Still, did I mention no speaker? Probably not going to have one tomorrow either. Quick break, right back, stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So here's an interesting story. Evidently, Microsoft is evidently owes $29 billion in back taxes, according to the IRS. And look, this is one of those things we're going, please, it's about time the IRS start going after these big corporations and saying, hey, you owe us big money. How about time to, start paying up? Just a thought. Maybe it's time you start filling the coffers a bit. Now, this is evidently money that was hidden back before the Trump tax scheme. This goes back to, I think they said like 2003 to 2010. This is them trying to, and I think this is a good idea. You know, before Trump gave them amnesty and, you know, gave these corporations, you know, all of this ability to reshore all of the money they were hoarding overseas, maybe this is an opportunity to go back and get some of that. So it looks like, you know, with Microsoft underreporting all these U.S. profits, you know, for a decade, the IRS is going, hey, we're going to go back and get some of it. It's from 2003 to 2014 is what it was, and it's $28.9 billion. Plus penalties, plus interest. About time. And this is how we fund the IRS agents we need to go after these big. You want to know why Republicans are against the extra IRS people? This is why, right here. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, what's on your mind?
A number of things, actually. So I'm reading WAPO and trying to keep up with everything that's going on. And I see the mess of, I want Jim Jordan, and I'm not voting for Scalise. And then there's the ones who want McCarthy,
yep.
And they're not going to vote for nobody else. And then it's just a mess. And, this is what I'm thinking, and I'm going to flat out tell you. I thoroughly believe that Putin, when he hacked into the Democrats' computers and got info, that we know that he hacked into the RNC. I believe that a number of them are being manipulated by Putin, and this is exactly what Putin wanted, because if we have a house in disarray, we can't do anything, and he and the rest of his little lunatics can go on about their merry way.
I got to tell you, I can't argue with that, given the fact that the Republicans are spouting a lot of the same things that Putin's been spewing.
Exactly. And, you know, once you start putting everything together, then things start making sense. Just like if Iran would have gotten the info that Trump was running his mouth about, remember when he was telling people all the little secrets and he told this stuff about Israel? Well, you know, I'm sure that they would have shared it with their allies. So that plus Netanyahu, you know, I mean, he is not exactly smooth the way there in Israel. And I'm going to say that because my stepdaughter is over in Israel. She has applied for citizenship because she's 1/8 Jewish. So I'm kind of worried about her, too. But, you know, the whole globe's burning and we've got the clown show going on. But have a good evening.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, I mean, this is, you know, it's all part of the like you said, it's a clown show, sadly. But, you know what was interesting today, though? You know, Joe Biden doing the job, still doing his job, even with all of the craziness going on and the Republicans were attacking him. Because today, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, came out with their new measures to attack junk fees. The idea of eliminating junk fees. The new rule proposals by the Federal Trade Commission would ban fees across the U.S. economy. And they went through this whole thing. And I'm still looking into what the proposed new rules are. But I found it interesting that Republicans had some time today, you know, when they weren't primping and preening and, you know not doing their job to attack the president over this. And when I saw this, I'm going, you know, it's about time that the president or someone take on, you know, these companies that are just, you know, just killing you with fees. You know, and you know, we're planning our vacation for Christmas. And you know, we went online and we started looking at cruises and we started looking at all kinds of stuff. And it's amazing how, you know, the cost of something when they advertise it is this, but by the time you go through the whole, here's the final cost. It's like it's more than double. And finally, we scrapped the whole idea and went, you know, through AAA. Another example, you know, our anniversary is coming up, but I thought, hey, you know, it'd be a great idea to get concert tickets to a concert, you know, of someone my wife really likes a lot. I not so much. Not a big country music fan by any stretch of the imagination, but my wife enjoys it. So I'm like, you know what? It's our anniversary. Let's go look for tickets. And I found some. They're like $300 a piece, which are really expensive. And I'm like, it's an anniversary, special occasion. I can justify it. So I go through this and I get to the end where you go to pay $90 per ticket in fees. 9 did I stutter? $90 per ticket in fees. And I said, this is crazy. And I said, you know what? Never mind. You know, I said, you know, as much as I love my wife, $90 in fees, I can't do it. We'll buy the album. We'll buy the album. We'll sit in the living room. I'll be miserable. She'll be happy and she'll be able to hear the songs she actually likes instead of the ones that, you know, they're going to play that are probably somebody else's that she doesn't. But this is the kind of thing that is infuriating to me. Now, look, you know, you'd say, but, you know, Rick, you exercised your right in the free market to not participate. And yeah, I did. But the vast majority of people, sadly, are in a position where, you know, hey, yeah, it's just how it is. You can't fight City Hall. I got to eat this. And there's something wrong with that. And I guess maybe it's just that I'm a little older that I remember standing in line at the ticket booth and paying what the cost of the ticket was without all of the convenience fees and service fees and electronic transfer fees and fees because there's a fee and the fee for a fee and the fee for a fee and whatever fee they can imagine up until you eventually get to $90 a ticket. And you wonder why, you know, these companies that produce nothing are so wildly profitable and why the working class is getting so screwed over. And I'm glad to see the president finally doing something on this front, somebody doing something. It's about time. So I'm curious, have you had one of these? I'd love to hear the horror stories of, you know, what's the most someone's had to pay in fees just to go see a game, to see a concert. I got to tell you, $90 was the most I've seen. When I saw that, I'm like, there is just no way I'm paying $300 for the ticket and then $90 on top of each ticket just for the right to buy the ticket from a website. Got to hear your thoughts. Is this how it should be? Is this the free market? Or am I just being an old guy who pines for the past of sitting overnight waiting in line? Quick break, right back. Stick around.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1965. That was the day acclaimed photojournalist Dorothea Lange died. She is celebrated for her work documenting the Great Depression for the Farm Security Bureau. Lange's photos captured images of migrant workers, sharecroppers, and the rural poor. Her iconic photo, Migrant Mother, is probably her most well-known image. It depicts a despondent Dust Bowl mother surrounded by her hungry children. Lange was born in Hoboken, New Jersey in 1895. She suffered the effects of polio as a child, which left her with a permanent limp. She studied photography at Columbia University in New York and eventually settled in the Bay Area. When the Great Depression hit, she began photographing labor strikes, bread lines in soup kitchens, the homeless, and unemployed. The Resettlement Administration hired her soon after. Nowadays, we can access images from around the world at a moment's notice that broaden our understanding of current events. But until the 1930s, few Americans could access media that adequately depicted the desperate social conditions engulfing the nation. Federal programs that funded projects like Lange's brought Depression-era images into the public eye. Americans soon realized their suffering wasn't caused by personal failure, that millions across the country were experiencing destitution brought on by broader economic forces. During World War II, Lange worked for the War Relocation Authority, where she documented forced evacuation and internment of Japanese Americans. Her images, especially of Manzanar, were withheld from the public until after the war and were accessible to the public through the National Archives. After the war, she taught at San Francisco's Art Institute and co-founded the magazine Aperture. She has been heralded as an innovator and has influenced generations of documentary photography. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Here's my suggestion for stopping the ultra-right-wing loopiness coming out of the mouths of Republican officials. Hearing aids. I'm convinced that the wacko blatherings of Matt Gaetz, the ravings of the QAnon cult, Trump's tantrums, and so many others are the result of a tragic neurological disconnect. This affliction lets their tongues wag impulsively, but their ears don't pick up the noise, so they're unaware that they are prattling nonsense. The current chaos in Congress's Republican caucus is one embarrassing example of this eardrum contagion, but it has spread throughout the country, even to local right-wing officials. In Shasta County, California, for example, the Republican-controlled Board of Supervisors recently lurched into full-tilt screwballism, frenetically warning that Japanese forces are weaponizing mosquitoes to be, quote, flying syringes to mass-inject Americans. See? No way they would have said that if they could hear themselves. Which brings us to the fount of present-day right-wing goofiness, Texas state officials. Their latest tone-deaf ploy is by Governor Greg Abbott, who wants to divert our people's tax dollars from public schools to exclusive private academies, subsidizing the rich class he serves. He's tried to do this before, but he fails, since even conservative Republicans in rural counties don't want their public education turned over to profiteering corporate chains. So this time, Greg is hyping privatization as a, quote, religious freedom issue, piously preaching that, quote, God created us to have family units, not state bureaucrats, make decisions for families. This is Jim Hightower saying, sheesh, does Abbott even have ears? Or maybe he's hoping that we don't have memories, for we have heard him howling constantly that the state, not families, must make every woman's personal reproductive decisions. Let's buy a hearing aid for him and set it on a constant replay loop.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the 2024 presidential race, well, shaping up. You've got RFK Jr. announcing his independent bid. You've got all the craziness on the right with that cabal of kookery. And now you've got Cenk Unger, who is running as a Democrat, going to give Joe Biden a challenge. And, you know, I got to tell you, I had a thought when I saw this announcement. Maybe he should stage an event with Alex Jones where Alex Jones pushes him down an escalator. That'd be a good idea. Now, here's the weird thing. Cenk, you know, cannot run for president because he's not a naturally born citizen. So for me, what is this? This is, you know, Cenk being Cenk. It's all about the attention. But we'll see. We'll see how this goes. And this is one of those situations where maybe you should not screw around because you might find out that you might get bitten. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on what is coming. And did I mention we still don't have a speaker? I've asked our good friend Fred Wellman to come talk with us. Fred is a Democratic strategist, also the host of On Democracy with FP Wellman. You can find that where you find your podcasts. Fred, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be back, brother. How are you, sir?
I'm good. So what do you think? Cenk running for president. What do you think there?
The stunt to get some marketing and, you know, the same thing. You know, the thing is, like you said, something clear. It's like, you know, Trump be fat and happy living in a Trump Tower, living large, be hand ran for president. Now he's got 91 charges. His company's being dismantled in New York. I mean, if you want the attention, you'll get the attention. And Cenk wants attention. He lives for attention. So, of course, he can't run for president. And, of course, he's not going to take it to the Supreme Court because it's clear. I mean, the Supreme Court interprets the Constitution. Constitution's pretty clear on this. So, you know, it's just another stunt. Same thing with, you know, Robert Kennedy running was a stunt. Yeah, this is what they do. So, you know, whatever. But, you know, we've got serious things to worry about.
There are those out there who are pushing for a primary challenge for Biden. You got Romney. Mitt Romney's going to save the Democratic
I saw party. That.
Mitt's out there trying that. To find a Democratic challenger.
Biden's doing fine. Biden's numbers are great. You know, you see the resolute way he's leading us through this Israel crisis. You know, there's a lot of hand wringing. You know, I was at the Democrat National Committee's fall meeting in St. Louis, and I didn't see any hand wringing. You know, what I saw, you know, there wasn't any of the usual. As a matter of fact, I had an interview with Jamie Harrison about it, and nobody's wringing their hands. Or, you know, Biden's doing just fine. I mean, look, the key is I had Simon Rosenberg on my show the other day. He's the guy that predicted that the red wave would not be a red wave, right? And Simon brings up some really good points. I mean, everybody's freaking out about polls and stuff. But the fact is the Republicans are in the middle of a fairly relatively heated primary thanks to DeSantis and all the other stuff. They're running against Trump. Trump's got all his criminal case. There's a lot of focus on politics on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, we don't really have a primary. We don't have – nothing's really going on. I'm talking to Democratic candidates around the country running for office. They're getting nervous because they're not raising money. But I keep telling them the Democratic electorate isn't energized yet. They're not engaged. It's still the first Iowa caucus is until January. We're just the election season hasn't kicked in on the Democratic side yet. And when it does, you'll see a lot more interest and the numbers will be more realistic. But if you rely on polls right now and you've got half your electorate's not really paying attention, the other half is, it's going to be skewed. And they are skewed. And they're just as skewed as they've been in the past. So all this hand-wringing about polls or Biden being old, it's about results. And that's the last thing Simon always reminds me of. And I really enjoy talking about is the fact is that for 40 elections since Dobbs, Democrats have overperformed now 12 points in every district they've been in. That doesn't even include Wisconsin. So, you know, people are going to wring their hands. But in the end, Joe Biden probably is going to be the nominee and Joe Biden will do just fine.
Yeah, I don't pay a lot of attention to the polls outside of.
Yeah, you know, it's a joke.
Outside of, you know, pointing out the fact that, you know, you can manipulate them any way you want. Yep. You know, it's what has been happening for a very long time. But here's the thing. I look at the fact that, did you know we don't have a Speaker of the House?
Yeah. Isn't that hilarious? I mean, in the middle of a crisis, I actually did a whole video about it today is, you know, one of the big Republican talking points other than $6 billion has been that this has been, all this is happening because we project weakness to the world. And I did an entire laundry list of, yeah, it's them,
exactly.
You know, it's them, you know, it's, It's the fact we don't have a speaker. It's the fact that they almost shut the government down because they can't even agree amongst themselves. You know, the major party that runs the House of Representatives can't even govern. They're not interested in governing. The leader of their party is indicted four times, has 91 criminal charges. One of their members in good standing just had yet another 27 charges brought against him, and they haven't kicked him out. You know, and then, you know, you and I are old enough to remember when there used to be, kids probably don't know about this, but there used to be this thing called rally around the flag. It's really a cute little thing we used to do back in the day, where when there was an international crisis or a national crisis, we put aside partisan politics to rally around our leaders and do the right thing for the world. And the Republican Party has trashed that and burned it to the ground because they've spent the last 3 days with Israelis and Americans, 22 Americans died. They've spent the last 3 days attacking Americans, attacking Biden, attacking our military with Tommy Tuberville's three holds. So look, you know, I take no stock of the Republican Party, and the only projection of weakness of the world is the fact that they know that one of our parties is completely beholden to Putin and completely beholden to nothing more than their own power structure. So I don't really give a damn what they think.
Tim Scott, running for president, wants to be president, saying Joe Biden's got blood on his hands. I mean, you know, to your
disgusting.
Point.
Just to disgusting.
Your point, exactly. I mean, you know, we used to say, you know, all of our fighting stopped at the water's edge. You know, much like you said, you know, when things happened on the international stage, we rallied around our president and showed a united front. Not anymore. And I got to wonder, you know, why that has changed in the Republican Party, because I'm old enough to remember, you know, Ronald Reagan didn't much care for the Russians. How is it now we've got a Republican Party spewing Russian talking points?
Well, it's because I think, you know, I mean, we could go on, we could do an entire week on that alone, but I think in a lot of ways, this they've given into a what is essentially a white nationalist viewpoint, where that they didn't even realize it, a Christian nationalist viewpoint. There is this myth in the Christian right, the far right, that Putin is somehow a knight of the Christian movement, that he has re-energized the right wing Christian movement, and people don't really count that enough, how pervasive the belief is that Putin is the one man in Europe trying to fight for the blood, you know, fight for the Christianity, and you know he's taking the fight. So there's this weird, that weird part. The second weird part is this bizarre horniness they have for despots. You know, they just love the strongman. And then, you know, so I just think it goes on and on and on. And they love Putin. They love the idea that he's, you know, the tough guy. I mean, I just can't figure out. I live in Missouri, brother. I actually talked to a reporter today here, and none of us can understand why Josh Hawley is calling to defund support for Ukraine and send the support to Israel. He's literally and his excuse is that Hamas is an existential threat to Israel, whereas Putin has literally said he's going to completely eradicate the Ukraine state as a nation, and even, you know, inculcate their people into his people. You know, he's kidnapping children. That literally is, that's the definition of an existential threat to a nation, is the idea that it will be eliminated if it loses its war. And we've got a U.S. senator who lives in Virginia, not Missouri, saying we should, you know, let that happen. And I don't get it. I just don't get it. Although, again, I go back to remember, Josh is a hardcore Christian. He's all excited to, you know, have Israelis kill Muslims, but he wants to stop the fight with Putin. It's very suspicious to me, and I'd love to ask him a question about it, but he doesn't come to our state unless he's forced to.
He doesn't come to your state. But you know, I saw that, and I've seen a lot of things out of Holly, like him going to a picket line.
Excuse me.
And I found that
God.
Curious.
You should have heard about that. I got an earful about that one at the, you know, some of the union members at the DNC, because, you know, the DNC was hard. You know, obviously the energy at the DNC fall meeting for labor, the passion, the way that, I mean, the energy, Rick, for you as a labor guy, the energy that I heard from the labor representatives at the meeting. I sat in the labor caucus meeting. Bernie Sanders opened it with his classic Bernie telling it like it is. Which makes him so funny. But the passion, I mean, because Biden went to the picket line, because he has said in no unwavering or uncertain terms that the Democratic Party is the party of labor, it was really interesting. And so I think that was a game changer. So then to have Josh Hawley and JD Vance show up, I mean, to me, it's just a sign that he saw the polls. I think Josh is in trouble this time. I don't, you know, what's in trouble? I mean, it's Missouri. So he's maybe it's within 10 points, maybe. But if it's within 10 points, Josh is scared. Lucas Kuntz is coming on strong. He's learned his lessons from this first campaign. He's got a very capable campaign. He's got the same campaign team. So they've learned some good lessons. So they're running a very tight campaign. I think Hawley's getting the message that, you know, he's the most unpopular senator in the Senate. Which is amazing because there's Tuberville and Marsha Blackmer, but here we are. It's amazing what they'll do. The shamelessness and the lack of hypocrisy gene, you know. Well, I mean,
when the top of the ticket is Donald Trump,
there you go.
There's nothing down ticket that's going to be surprising.
Yeah. Shame has been removed as a gene in their bodies. That's for sure.
Which is why, you know, I look at, you know, Jim Jordan throwing his name into the ring to run for speaker. I mean, how does that guy with his history, knowing that all of the stories about his time as an assistant coach at Ohio State had to come out?
There's literally a documentary coming out.
Yeah,
isn't there a documentary coming out?
Which is why I think he did step back and eventually go, okay, I'm gonna support Scalise, because
I don't know if he did. I don't know if he's done that, to be honest with you, Rick. I'm not sure that's actually occurring. I still always see the Nancy Mace is still up there saying she won't vote for him. She's gonna vote for Jordan. MTG is saying that.
Yeah, but you know, Nancy Mace also said there are Democrats who are gonna vote for Jordan.
Isn't she amazing? I mean, she is. I mean, there's just so many characters who are never cease to amaze me on the right. And Nancy's special because she's a special kind of nut job. And because they think she's normal and people try to like drag her out. I mean, I had a friend text me, a reporter again, text me like, why the heck is she on the media every night? You know, and it, cause she's just she's such a liar. I love seeing Jake Tapper's face. He just, or whoever it was just Chuck like Todd, Chuck Todd, or no, it was, CNN. Anyway, he was just like, name one. name one Democrat that supports the trust Jim Jordan. Nobody trusts Jim Jordan. He's a crook. You know, I had a guest in the show, Dennis Aftergut. He's a former federal prosecutor. I got to get the clip. I got to run the clip. And he said, it was when Jim Jordan started his antics about 8 months ago, or 6 months ago. And he said, you know, Jim Jordan has one move. His brand is simple. His brand is faceplant. And Jim Jordan is one long faceplant. So it's pretty entertaining to see him try and act like it. But again, the same thing with Scalise. Scalise has stepped up now. People are going to start going through his record. If you decide to go from, you know, just being a member of the caucus, even the number two, I don't think these guys realize the media scrutiny that will go with stepping up. And so I'm looking forward to every speech. Like already my friends at Midas Touch, where, you know, my show is broadcast on the Midas Touch Network. Midas Touch is already going through where in 2012, he said that Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare needed to be cut if we were going to try and balance the budget. They're already going through and finding his speeches he gave at white nationalist conferences. These guys have lived in a bubble, being told how awesome they are for so long. They're not ready for the exposure that's going to go with being a national figure. So I say, welcome to the party, fellas. We're here for you. No. And people like you and me, we're going to call them out.
No, absolutely. And I wanted Trump as speaker. I still want Trump as speaker.
Oh my God, that would be amazing. Cause it actually has to, there's actually work that has to occur. And Trump's never done a day of work in his life.
Such truth is spoken right there. So on the speaker front, cause at some point there has to be one.
Yeah.
Or does
well,
there?
In theory. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, I think I've been calling it the temporary speaker. You know, Jamie Harrison said it great because, you know, when they took over the house, it's just an Airbnb. It's just a long-term rental because they're not going to hold the house long. The fact is, I think it'll probably be Scalise and it'll be a disaster. It's not uniting. They cannot unite their caucus. Nothing is going to change as far as their ability to actually pass an agenda. I have no idea if he'll be able to legislate and work with the Senate. I don't know if he's had any interest. I think maybe he'll be held hostage by his caucus as much as McCarthy was. Yeah. I believe in my heart that what the number one thing that Matt Gaetz and his renegades did is assure that the Democrats will take over the House.
And I think that was on purpose. I got to tell you, maybe you'll disagree. But I think it was on purpose because I don't think Republicans want to be in the majority. I think
governing is hard.
Throwers. I think they want to stay as the, you know, the whiners, the complainers, the finger pointers. I think that's who they want to be. They don't have an agenda. They've got no policy initiatives. They've got no vision, no ideas. So it's easy to be the party of no, especially when you're not the one leading the show.
Right, right. Which is why it's so funny to see the Democrats do such a brilliant job under Hakeem Jeffries, just doing exactly that, just but dismantling them at every turn, and not, you know, they're not able to govern. And I said it when they took it. I wrote a piece, I think I just one of my videos, and I said, look, in a lot of ways, the Republicans are taking the House with such a slim majority is a great opportunity for us who are pundits, if you will, or super PACs, to show exactly what Republican-controlled government will look like. And this is the message I want them to use in Virginia. Hey, look, do you – and I talked to Jamie about this on the show. I was like, look, if you want to see how it's going to be, if we give the Republicans a unified government in Virginia – this is just look at the House. Look at what's going on in the House. They can't even get along themselves. We had the same thing here in Missouri, where they've been a supermajority for 20 years. They can't even the Democrats get stuff done because the Republicans all hate each other so much. They have to work with Dems to pass anything because they all hate each other. And so it is really a great way for us to demonstrate exactly what happens by giving Republicans power. And I tell you, I hope groups like my former friends, my former colleagues, the Lincoln Project, and I know we at the Midas Touch Network, which is not a PAC anymore, but a network, and I think all the big super PACs are out there, we're going to be pounding that message. Like, do you really want to give these guys power? And just running on repeat all the cartoonish stupidity that they've done for the last year and a half. I don't know. I mean, the ads write themselves.
Oh, no, the comedy skit is what it is. But sadly,
it is
the fact that they're as dysfunctional as they are.
Right.
Not only shows weakness at home, but abroad as well.
Yeah.
And nothing.
Well, that's it.
Nothing good comes out of that. And you as a former military guy, you know, as well as anyone, that's not a good environment on the international stage to have this kind of dysfunction at home.
And it's a long-term impact. Let's just take the military part of it. Right. Take my veteran status. I got my 101st patch here behind me on the wall. This is long-term damage they're doing. I am talking to actual colleagues who have people still in the army, you know, we're in the army still, or have friends in the army. And consistently we're hearing from mid-grade officers, guys or lieutenant colonels, like I wasn't retired. They're like, this isn't worth it. You know, this is just the start. Tuberville and the attacks on Milley, the attacks on wokeness by all these Republicans, they have politicized the military in a way we haven't seen ever. And that, well, actually, frankly, since McCarthy, we haven't seen it since the first McCarthy, when they politicized the communist hunt. And that has long-term damage. You could make a case that one of the reasons we struggled in Vietnam was because it was 20 years after the McCarthy hearings, or 10 to 15 years, you know. And that's because all the good people got out, because generals aren't made overnight. Generals take, I mean, my God, Milley was in the army 43 years, okay? The leaders of tomorrow are the junior and mid-grade leaders of today. And they're watching this debacle, seeing what their seniors are going through and saying, you know what? It ain't worth this smoke. I can get a job in the real world where unemployment's like 0% right now, which means, you know, I can get a job and I'll be fine. And I'll get paid a bunch of money to go work on Wall Street or somewhere else. And guess what? I don't have to deal with these idiots. And the problem with that is the long-term impact is that when we have a war in 20 years, only the clowns stay behind. Okay, the MAGA chuds, or the people who were scared of getting out because they know they're not gonna be able to get a job in the real world. And those clowns will be the leaders of tomorrow. We're gonna be in trouble. So the impact on the military isn't just today. It's a long-term impact that could affect our national security for years to come. That's what scares guys like me who are career Army military officers. We know that Tuberville's little cute little antics right now is gonna destroy the military, not just for now, but for years and years to come. And that's why I hate him with the heat of 1,000 suns.
As we all should. Last question. Who's going to be speaker? Do we any thoughts?
I think they'll get their stuff together and end up being Scalise. It's going to take him about 4 or 5 days. He's going to make a bunch of deals like McCarthy did, and they'll end up having a very hobbled speaker. Marjorie Taylor Greene and everybody else will get some deals. George Santos will cut a deal not to get kicked out of Congress till he's convicted. But it'll probably be squeezed. It'll probably be next week though. And we'll be right back where we were with McCarthy, a speaker owned by the MAGA minority and a House incapable of actually governing.
Well, fortunately nothing was going to get done anyway. So,
yeah, it works out well. I mean, the good news is they can't pass their stupid ideas either. So, you know, I guess that's a positive.
That is a positive. Fred, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff.
Always,
appreciate the time. Hope folks will check out the podcast on Democracy with FP Wellman. We'll get links out on social media.
Love it.
Appreciate it, man.
Always good, brother. Talk to you soon.
Thanks so much, Fred. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1874. That was the day that Mary Heaton Vorse was born in New York City. Mary grew up in Amherst, Massachusetts, in a family with significant financial means. She traveled across Europe with her parents, where she received her education and learned to speak multiple languages fluently. She then worked as a book reviewer for the Criterion magazine. In 1912, Mary and the man who would be her husband witnessed what would be known as the Bread and Roses textile strike in Lawrence, Massachusetts. The experience was a great turning point in her life. She later wrote, "Both Joe O'Brien and I had come a long road to get to Lawrence. Together, we experienced the realization of the human cost of our industrial life. Something transforming happened to both of us. We knew now where we belonged. On the side of the workers and not with the comfortable people among whom we were born. Some synthesis had taken place between my life and that of the workers. Some peculiar change that would never again permit me to look with indifference on the fact that riches for the few were made by misery of the many. It was in Lawrence that we realized what we must do, that we could make one contribution, that of writing the workers' story as long as we lived." For more than 50 years after Lawrence, Mary traveled the United States reporting and participating in strikes and the labor movement. She wrote about the 1919 steel strike and the lumber workers' strike in the Pacific Northwest. She wrote about the struggles of auto workers and textile workers and child labor. In 1962, the United Auto Workers honored Mary with their Social Justice Award. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So the lectern gate continues in Arkansas. Evidently this is still a thing. You know, it's still a thing. Evidently, a citizen journalist has unearthed an email that points out that someone in Sarah Huckabee Sanders' office instructed state employees to write "to be reimbursed" on a month's old invoice for the $19,000 lectern, and specifically told them not to date the notation. Okay. I'm still confused on why $19,000 for a lectern, but this has still got legs. What didn't get a lot of attention is the voucher money in Arkansas. And it's been a year. They have released the first year voucher report, where they say, you know, about 4,800 students participated in the first semester of the new K through 12 voucher program. And what they found, it went to mostly religious private schools. It went to mostly people whose kids were already going to private schools. A windfall to the folks who were already there. The state of Arkansas had allocated about $46.7 million in state funds for the voucher program. But the report said that they're going to only expend about $32.5 million over the first year. So far, $7 million has been spent. And as I said, most of that into the hands of, people who are already sending their kids to the private schools. Now, what you're going to see, and this is not going to be shocking, not going to be surprising, it's what it's supposed to do. Every mega church will have a school attached so that they can get state funding, so that they can get their hands into the taxpayer's pocket, get their nose into the taxpayer's trough, and load up. This is the future of education. Incorporate it. not really about teaching your kids. It's about the money. So get ready for that, because vouchers are here. This is the latest silver bullet. This is where the big money is pushing. So I expect it to come to my neck of the woods very soon, as there's a crazy group of people running for school board here with a whole bunch of right-wing money behind them, you know, pushing this idea that, you know, oh, you know, the public schools are a failure. You know, vouchers and all the schemes are not far behind.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.